It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And this week, we're going to do something a little bit different. I will be interviewing David Cheesham, who is still down in Oregon, somewhere between Astoria and Portland, having completed his ride starting on April 1st, April Fool's Day, from St. Louis, Missouri, traveling by bike all the way to Astoria. So what we're going to do today, we're going to get some of his impressions. He's still formulating them. He's still thinking about it. What did it all mean? And what implications does it have for those people listening, those residents of the Valley here, who may be thinking of taking something a little bit different as a task or as a way of finding out a little bit more about both the country and yourself? Here we go. So what I thought, if you'd be willing to do it, is to, now that you've had a few days to relax, so to speak, talk about the overall sense that you have looking back at what has to have been an extraordinary experience.
It has been extraordinary. I feel very lucky to have been able to have this journey. A better mathematician than I could figure out how many cycles my feet have gone around and around since St. Louis and on April Fool's Day to the event. But there's this sense of the expansive land on these roadways in the United States from St. Louis to Astoria, Oregon.
And that's what something I think people have to understand, that you mentioned April Fool's Day, April 1st, which now seems to be a long, long time ago. It's July 20th, and you started out on the 1st of April, and you rode roughly 3,100 miles to Astoria, Oregon. And when actually arrived?
Okay, well, let's see. I haven't figured out the miles. I don't think it's quite that many miles, but I'll figure it out. But it's maybe 2,500 or 2,800. And I arrived 2 days ago, I believe.
So that was the 18th?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm curious, as you, I'm thinking, okay, there's that first pedal coming out of St. Louis when you climb on the bike and you take the first pedal. Do you remember that moment in time as you started out?
Well, I do. It was cold and rainy, and still figuring out the Garmin GPS thing, so I lost a lot of miles just making wrong turns, crossing over the bridge and the rivers, I remember taking two ferries over the Illinois and the Mississippi River, and there was sleet and ice, and it was an amazing beginning, and then I ended up triple-digit temperatures at some point in the last couple of days. So a lot of variety there, a lot of variety in the land, the flat land in Missouri and Kansas and Nebraska, a few hills, and then gradually moving into going over the Cascades and some of the other mountain passes that did.
So now do you remember, you've described a bit the beginning stages as you gained momentum. Was it easy to stop? Do you remember when you got off the bike and you actually stopped and got off the bike?
You know, it's a little bit weird because I was actually trying to get 17 miles further, but my brake gave out. So it didn't, the closure wasn't quite the same. It wasn't, oh, yeah, this is the end. It was, I'm off the bike, and I took it to the bike shop and realized that it would be 3 days. And so then I had this adjustment where I would say, well, okay, but Astoria is a good place to stop, too.
So I'm curious also about, and I think listeners might be as well, as you reflect upon being on the bike in a kind of a strange figure, cruising along and stopping at bike shops, and perhaps modestly explaining that you had just ridden 1,000 miles to get to their shop and you needed a little help, or they would inquire where you, you know, what's happening here. I suspect, I'm going to guess here, that many people in those bike shops and others along the way would have treated you as, well, I'm curious, how did you feel you were being treated? Were you noticed as being someone who was doing something out of the ordinary?
Oh, yes, although bike shops were used to seeing people doing cross-country trips, but I felt like every one of them was, you know, especially helpful, and they understood, you know, if it's possible to take care of it right away. They understood that it was hard to ask somebody to interrupt their trip for a few days. So sometimes they would jump in a little bit faster and just try to squeeze me in if they could. So, and lots of good advice. And it was always nice to be able to, you know, not just to help with the bike, but the local road conditions. And they would suggest a different route or something to look out for and that kind of thing. So, yeah, their bike shops are wonderful.
Okay. And now that you have returned to a reflection of doing what you are doing, you've become, well, more of an ordinary traveler on the bike. I'm still curious about that. How does it feel to sort of now begin to blend in with the world?
Oh, it's an adjustment. It was a very special thing, and I'm in a rental car now, so just getting used to not hearing as much of the sounds, as many of the sounds on the side of the road, and the changing smells of the different trees, and you know, all the different trees and the grasses and that you pass by have subtle changes and scents, and I'm missing that. And on the other hand, I'm riding back towards Portland, and it's fun to see the same road that I biked out to Astoria on, and kind of for a little bit of the way retrace my steps. That's really interesting.
And the bike is in the car.
The bike is getting shipped back.
Oh, so it's gone away. You're separated. How does that? Do you feel any separation anxiety?
Oh, maybe a little. But I look forward to. It's going to be interesting to get back and do some of the rides and see if they feel different. I feel like I'm probably in better physical shape than when I started, but we won't know until we ride at the Hatcher Pass and what used to be a really challenging ride. And I wonder if it still is as challenging as it was back in the day.
Okay. I think for listeners, and perhaps I'm going to focus on a couple of areas that it might be interesting to have you share your impressions, because I have known that when I have traveled and I have been on something, on a different sized road or in a different vehicle or traveling at different speeds, that when I come home, I notice that I had become accustomed to something very different. And so, obviously, once you have returned here to Alaska, then we'd want to see what's going on for you in that regard. But I'm curious. You were camping a lot. You were riding a bicycle. You were exposed to the elements, etc. And now you're in this comfortable rental car, and you're not being quite as physically active. How does it feel?
Oh, it's different. But, you know, I didn't camp as much as I thought. I did a lot of hotels. But the question still stands. It's kind of an adjustment to be riding again and to not be figuring out how many miles I can do tomorrow or how many miles I should do. It's going to be interesting, and I'm too. But I'm looking forward to going over the trip. Because it really wasn't just a bike trip; it was a history trip. I was following the footsteps of Lewis and Clark, and ended up having as many questions or more questions and in the end is the beginning. And I'm, so in a way, that part of the trip is just scratched the surface and just beginning and trying to get a better sense of the history of the United States and where it's taken us and what a, that riding along a ranch land and trying to imagine what it was like in 1805 or 1806, and then realizing that ranch land is there in parts because of what Lewis and Clark did in 1805 and 1806, and that's just very interesting to me and fascinating.
So is there anything in particular, with given all of those images and, you know, various people that you were able to speak to and even museums that you visited, that stands out at this point as prominent that you'll be focusing on?
Well, the Lolo Trail in Montana going into Idaho was a fascinating area, and it was a, and it was a, just before the Lolo Trail, there was the Traveler's Rest State Park. And what was interesting about that is they actually had to change the boundaries of the park recently because they have made new archaeological discoveries. They were able to find latrines from the campsite and recover the mercury that was in the Rush's pills that they were taking for just about every ailment. It's kind of a universal medicine. And when they discovered that, they discovered that they were some miles off on their estimate of where the Lewis and Clark camped there. And they, I don't know what the process was, but they must have had, it must have been a pretty complex process to move the boundary of that camp over into that direction of that state park. And, but that Lolo Trail was probably the most dramatic, one of the most dramatic areas, and it was a miracle that they came out alive. They were bogged down in the snow, and they couldn't get much food. And by the time they came out, they were greatly just starving. And so it was a very dramatic point. And it's one of the most accurate places that we know. But that trail is exactly where they were. That was the trails at the prominent rock there, and there was the place where Lewis looked down and drew the map of what we now call the Jefferson, Gallatin, and Madison rivers, which is the headwaters of the Missouri. And so I actually got to climb up to that rock and see it. But most of it is just approximental, and is just as close as you can get.
Okay.
On a bicycle on a road that wasn't there back then.
So did you get any sense whether there have been a lot of people that have actually done this whole thing from St. Louis to Astoria?
It's not as popular a route anymore with cross-country bikers, but when it was opened up and they created the route, it more people. And there were some others, so I didn't see, I crossed paths with other people doing the Trans Am and the Continental Divide and the Cascade route, some other routes, and I've heard, you come to a campsite and they say, well, yeah, I just saw somebody who has been doing that route, but I didn't meet any other people who were doing the exact same route that I was.
So now, as you reflect on this, and we're thinking about other people who may be listening to this story, and they may say, I wonder if I want to do that, or something similar, etc. Let's start with your ride. Did you, now that you've been with that bike for such a long time, have any sense that it is, yes, the bike that you would like to use if you were to do it again, or would recommend its use for someone else? What's your sense of equipment these days?
Oh, yeah, it's a great bike. It's a track touring bike, and it's really good. I think the one thing I learned was that you don't necessarily want to use the stock wheels. You can get maybe in most bikes, you want to make some adjustments and get better spokes to start out with, and maybe even better rims and come with the bike, and you can do some research on that. And of course, having it fitted was a big thing, because it's riding, you're riding 5 to 8 hours a day, and you want everything to be right. And I know that at one point, just 1/8 of an inch in the adjustments on the handlebars made a big difference. My hands were bothering me, and when I made that change, it had a dramatic difference. And so those kinds of things. And of course, I think if I were doing anything differently, I would have made sure that I was a lot more comfortable with the mechanics of the bike, and I could have done, you know, not just being able to do it, but being comfortable enough to do it that changing a tire in 90-degree weather doesn't faze you or whatever.
So of all those things that you had to do, either had to have a bike shop do or that you did yourself, what was the most repeated repair?
Oh, changing a tube or a tire.
Okay, but you were able to do that even though it might have taken a bit longer yourself.
Yes. I mean, it's a longer story than that, but that.
I believe you. I believe you. I've changed the tires, and yes, I changed it, but what all that meant. And you had a lot of other equipment that you took along with you. You had some camping gear. You had panniers. You had all the accoutrements that made it possible to roll along. Was there anything that you found that you were missing that you would want to add, or conversely, that you would take away?
I was all prepared for bears. I wasn't prepared for dogs.
Ah.
And so I had bear spray, which, of course, I didn't use. I got chased by a couple of dogs. And mostly I was just able to, you know, race past them. And then I got a few different things. So one, I got a little spray of a Sentinella that wasn't too poisonous. And that seemed to work. And sometimes even just the act of my pulling the little can out of my vest pocket seemed to discourage a couple dogs.
Okay.
I heard that they, just those blow horns are good, but by the time I got the little blow horn, I didn't really have many more dogs to mess with, so I didn't have to use that.
Okay.
That's the only thing I can think of. I mean, I'm sure I would like to ride lighter, but the next time I was carrying too much stuff.
Okay, so what were maybe specifically some of those things that you would have lightened your load by leaving behind?
Not ready to say yet. It's one of the things I'm going to do is go through and make a list. I mean, I shipped some things home. I shipped my boots home, and I shipped, when it got hot, I shipped the warmer sleeping bag home. And that kind of thing.
Yeah, got it. Okay. Well, David Cheesham, you have come a long way, literally. And maybe even figuratively. Speaking of figures, did you notice any changes in your own body in terms of weight changes or anything else?
I am so tired of roadside burgers.
But they provided you with the energy, the fuel that you needed? Is that why you chose them? Yeah. I have heard many people who have followed your travels over time say they're really looking forward to your return when you stride into our local coffee shop and they say, who is that guy?
Well, that's it. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. When can you expect to be back so that those people who are inspired can get more detail, you've had more reflection, et cetera? Any target date for return?
Oh, we'll see.
But sometime in August.
Yes. I might get in sooner, but I haven't decided yet.
Because we have to have a little heads up so that we can get the parade ready.
Get the what?
Parade.
Oh my gosh! No, no.
No parade. Okay, you're going to sneak in under cover of darkness, which is coming along here. By the way, I know you've experienced darkness, but we're beginning to get a little less light.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, thank you, David Cheesham, for sharing kind of a summary, first summary. There'll be more summaries about your trip, and we look forward to your return.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Take care.
Yep. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.